Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa. I am so glad you're here with me. Thank you for tuning in. Going to have an interesting conversation today. I'm talking to Tracy Crosley, and she wrote a book called Overcoming Insecure Attachment. But her content goes way beyond that. We are talking about how each of us is shaped by how we're raised and how we form what's called an attachment style based on how consistent our parents were, how safe we felt, how loved we felt, how connected we felt, creates for us a sense of how we expect to be in relationship. But lots of us are raised to either be anxious in relationship, avoidant in relationship, or both based on this upbringing. And then, of course, this plays out in our primary intimate relationships as adults and causes problems. You know, and in fact, the title of this episode, No, This Is Not Your Soulmate, is one of the topics we're talking about, how easy it can be to be convinced that there's some powerful thing and this is my person because it's so familiar to this energy that we're raised with, but it doesn't necessarily serve us. So we're talking about what do secure relationships look like? How can we get there? What are some of the steps? I think you're going to find it fascinating. Hope you enjoy. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Tracy, thank you so much for being with me on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't we start out with how you define insecure attachment? And like, how do you describe this to people? Because, you know, those of us in the therapy and maybe coaching world have some familiarity with this, but I don't know if everyone does.
I didn't for a long time. I just knew that I kept attracting dysfunctional relationships and I was confused. Like, I remember at one point, this guy pointed out to me a book called The Love Addict or Love Addiction or something. And I'm like, oh, wow. I kind of relate, but not really. And so through my own personal life and obviously in my business, I started to research, you know, what was insecure attachment. And, you know, there's a difference. Like when you're born, depending on, let's say, the caretakers that you have, they're either going to securely attach with you or insecurely attach with you. And a lot of times, you know, parents aren't really self-aware when they have a kid, like what is influencing the child. So secure attachment is, you know, the child trusts that you're there. The child feels emotional bond with you. There's consistency. They don't worry that if you leave the room, you're not coming back. Whereas somebody who's an insecurely attached child, you leave the room and they don't know if you're coming back in and they have different reactions. You had children that would be avoidant where there was actually an experiment. It was called the Strange Experiment. So, you know, there were different ways that they reacted and those were insecure.
Okay. And so these experiences as kids, we bring those with us to adulthood, right?
I mean, we do.
This is formed when we're raised. And then it's like, what do we do with this? You know, how is this showing up for people in their adult relationships? Like you already said a little bit about attracting sort of dysfunctional relationships, but could you speak more to what happens if someone is handed a, you know, I sort of think it's not your fault, right? You were handed this hand that was insecurely attached. How might it show up?
Well, it shows up in a variety of ways. And, you know, for most people, they don't realize that that's where it comes from. You seek what you know. And even though deep down inside, each of us wants to be securely attached, we want to feel love, we want to feel that connection, our conditioning says something different. And so a lot of times you're just repeating the same sort of familiar feelings, the same sort of familiar situations, in a sense, that you had as a child when it comes to how you feel, what you choose, and how you act inside of that.
Okay. So even though you want something different, part of you wants the familiar, which doesn't serve you so well. So do you have some like examples of this, or for people that you've worked with, like the kinds of stories that you hear that your light bulb goes off and goes, oh, you're repeating the old patterns that you got dealt as a kid?
There's so many. I can give you so many examples, but I'll give you a couple, you know, where somebody, let's say you meet somebody, you've dated them once, twice, it doesn't matter actually the length of time, but you feel this intense attraction to them and you feel like, oh my God, this is the person, but they may not be responding in the same way to you. They may be avoiding you, or maybe they're giving you a little bit and then backing off, and you somehow tweak this into, this must be my soulmate. There's something special because I have all of these feelings about it and I have all of this anxiety about it. So that's one example. So then I have I have a lot of people that show up in their 30s, and they are people that have not had a relationship. They've tried. They might get like a week, a month, whatever. And they'll say, oh, I'm bored. Or they'll say things like, I go on the first date, especially women that are more avoidant. They'll go on a date with someone. And, you know, the minute they're on the date, they're picking the guy apart. They're finding problems. He's not the perfect partner. And people that are more avoidant are always looking for the perfect partner, because that's who's not going to hurt them. That's who's going to accept them and love them and all of that. And the person doesn't exist. But the point is, they tend to keep repeating the same cycle, and they don't get close to anybody. And any chance of getting close makes them anxious. That's where they get anxious. And then they're like, I'm out of here. I got hot feet. Got to go.
Right. Those are the people that kind of run as soon as something starts to seem going well, right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
And I think I'm hearing this whole idea of, is there a soulmate? I think what I'm hearing is sort of flip sides of the coin, that somebody who's a little bit more anxious is like, oh, this is my soulmate. And the other person keeps looking for this mythical soulmate that they can never find. Right.
So right.
Talk to me a little bit about how you see this whole idea of, I mean, is there such a thing as we have our soulmate? What's going on for people?
Well, people are looking for a unicorn when they're looking for that, because there's a couple of things. And also, I wanted to mention, sometimes people are both of those. I was anxious avoidant. So depending on the situation, I could be anxious or I could be completely avoidant. But I definitely wore all those shoes. So I know you all exist. In case you're listening, I know you exist. So anyways, as far as the whole soulmate thing, you know, I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade, but here's the thing. People that are securely attached, I don't go, God, you know, my husband is my soulmate. I'm like, I'm happy. It feels good. I don't need to give it that label. When you don't have it, when you're in scarcity, you tend to come up with these labels as though it's some sort of magical thing that's going to happen. But, you know, here's the thing. Can you imagine when you meet somebody and you have all that chemistry and you have all that like woohoo out of this world, you're on cloud, you know, 100,000 million bazillion, you know, you're not on cloud nine. You're like, woo, you can't sustain that in the first place. Nobody can sustain that. So the idea of this whole soulmate thing is a moment in time, and it's not related to anything in reality. It's usually related to the fantasy you have about what this person's bringing to you and how you feel.
And then the fantasy of how they see you in those early days too, right? That's
like, Yep. The whole thing.
But you also touched on something that I think is almost biochemical. I mean, I don't know where the lines are between what's happening in our chemistry and what's happening in our psychology, but people have these really powerful feelings in response to somebody that maybe is familiarity with dysfunction. And it feels, you know, like they can feel it in their body, right? Like it's a sensation. It's like overpowering. It's like this intoxication, I think. And that's what they tend to think of. Yeah. Oh, this must be the one, right?
Oh my God. Well, they can't let go either. That is a big, big problem, especially when you get into, it feels like a drug and they can't let go. And I'm not talking, by the way, just women. I'm talking men. In fact, men have a harder time letting go, especially when it's related to, you know, they're in that drug, right? And of course, sex is involved in that. And it's like, I can't let go, even though they'll go, this is so dysfunctional. I have a person in my life where I can't take them anywhere in public because they throw a fit, or, you know, they go through my phone and they are, you know, looking up people to go, oh, who is this? What are you doing with this person? Like all that kind of crap. And it's just amazing to me, because there is a complete rational thought that is not there, and they know it. right? They know I can't rationally get myself out of this. I am stuck.
Huh. So they can both see that this is totally messed up or unhappy, but I also can't leave.
Yes, I can't leave. And I know that there's problems. But of course, you know, a lot of times when people come to me, they don't necessarily see themselves as the problem. Usually they're focused on blaming the other person. Right. There's something more wrong with that other person than them.
And so is this inability to let go just because part of them, this is familiar, this is what they're used to experiencing in relationship? I mean, is this circling back to the attachment idea that...
Well, you, when you have people that have, especially, let's say, people that are anxious avoidant, right, where they wear both shoes, okay? Most of these people, when they're not in a relationship, tend to be very self-contained, meaning their lives are very structured, a lot of rigid rules. They don't really feel anything outside of their controlled little incubator that they're in. And so this person comes along and it's like throwing a rock on clear water. And all of a sudden, you know, there's waves everywhere and they're feeling something because they haven't allowed themselves to feel anything because all they're doing is really existing inside of this little bubble they've created for themselves.
How does sex play into this? How do insecurely attached people relate or respond to sex versus securely attached? Like, you know, paint me some pictures about that.
So insecurely attached people, and it you know, it's not just a one serving, you know, is for everybody, right?
Yeah.
So the people that are usually on the anxious avoidance spectrum are usually people that perform acrobatics in the bedroom. They're like all about how great they are at sex. And that's like their secret weapon in their back pocket. This is them, okay? Not necessarily everybody telling them this. This is the idea. And they're going to hook you through sex, but it doesn't work. So what happens is they get into a situation and they can't let go. It's like a drug. Okay. And so the control they thought they were going to have because they're so great in bed, they lose control when they're anxious avoidant. The people that are just avoidant, those are the ones who can have sex. And then like the minute you guys get out of bed, you feel like your island's apart, right? You feel that distance. And so the avoidant doesn't really have that same buy-in. And then you have the person who's anxious and they are going to do things against themselves. They are going to do whatever it takes to hold on to you so you don't go away. And that includes sex. It includes whatever, you know, even degrading yourself too. There's this idea that that person who they're attached to is somehow going to save them or, you know, if they leave, their life is over. Like those are very strong feelings of desperation that are involved in it. So it isn't even really about sex. It's about what you're attached to and how you create, you think you're creating intimacy because in a securely attached relationship, sex is a part of the relationship, but it's not the whole relationship. Mm-hmm. And your intimacy comes from emotions rather than the physicality. Although I'm not knocking physical intimacy, but I'm saying you have an emotional intimacy in an attached relationship. You really don't have emotional intimacy. And I don't care what people tell me because people will say, we had this really deep conversation. And I'm like, about what? And then what came of it? Because if nothing came of it, then you don't have intimacy because there's no consistency.
All right. So I think I hear you saying, let me know if I've taken this too far, but like anxiously attached people might, well, first of all, do things they don't want to be doing or do whatever it takes to keep the relationship or whatever. And the avoidant ones might be not using sex for control, but like, here's what I can give you if I don't give you my heart in a way.
Right.
Like there's some sort of control in being able to show up and be a good lover or engage with somebody, but they're not fully invested or something.
Right. And then there's also the avoidant that doesn't have sex. They don't have any dating, no sex. They don't trust themselves. The idea of it makes them very anxious. And so they won't have any sort of physical proximity to another person. It's like, don't kiss me. Oh, maybe you can hold my hand. But I've heard, you know, I've had people come go, yeah, I just, no, don't get near me. Do not touch me. Don't try to hug me. Nothing.
Yeah. Going to take just a short little break to let you know about a new online course that I've got available called The Desire Spa. This is for women who are in an otherwise happy relationship but are struggling with sexual desire. This is a course just for you to figure out what is in the way of your desire, how to tune in and connect with what you could actually enjoy about physical intimacy, how to deal with all of this with your partner to totally transform your sex life. So it can be something you look forward to. And basically, it can just be one more great part of your relationship with your partner instead of this thing that drags you down. The first step would be to sign up for my free masterclass at intimacywithease.com/masterclass. It'll talk about how to want sex again and lead into the next steps if you are interested in joining me in the spot. Back to the show. So how, I mean, I'm also thinking, you know, all of our interactions and relationship are going to sort of play on our attachment style. But I'm also thinking about just sort of the hormonal responses to sex. I mean, you know, like sex is even like a layer up from any other interaction we'd have, I think, because of our biochemistry that we have in response to it, right? Like, doesn't this play on, add into this is sort of a drug kind of situation?
Well, especially for women, because we do. We have that, what's it, the oxy, I always say it wrong,
oxytocin. Oxytocin.
Right. One's a drug. The other one was when I was pregnant. Got it. Or breastfeeding. Yeah. I know. I remember that a long time ago. But as far as the breastfeeding and the hormone. But anyways, Right. Yes, it does play into it. Even if you think it doesn't, it does. But at the same time, somebody who's very avoidant isn't going to, like I said, they're not going to engage. They're not going to take any chances. And people that are anxious avoidant are more, I believe, the ones who really suffer. Because they, on the other hand, like they can get out of bed and they may still feel attached and they can ignore the other person. Like the other person, let's say, sends them a text message or calls them. They may not respond. They can play that little game. But if that seems like that person that they're ignoring all of a sudden is ignoring them or leaves, then they're like, oh no, we can't have that happen. And so then they will do whatever they can to reel the other person back in. And usually that's having sex and they have great sex. And then it's like, okay, like
starts, you know, it all over again. Yeah,
it does. It's a cycle.
But I can imagine too, that the oxytocin and the hormonal experience in the pleasure of sharing sex with somebody could be layered on top of this idea that this is my soulmate. I mean, it's like, can be such an intense experience. We just lump it all together. Like, I must be meant to be with this person.
Well, because of what we use as, let's say, a checklist. Okay, this is my checklist of what I think I'm going to have with somebody. I always ask people, like, what do you think a healthy relationship is, right? And, you know, having crazy chemistry is not part of a healthy relationship because you're not actually in a partnership. You know, a healthy relationship is a partnership. An unhealthy relationship, there's no partnership whatsoever.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about how, compare this to how do you see a healthy relationship? What does a securely attached relationship look like in contrast to some of these things that people bring into your office?
One big thing that's missing from a healthy relationship is anxiety. You don't have anxiety. You're not always thinking about what is my partner doing or not doing. Sure, the thought passes in your head, but it's in a loving way, not in a, oh my God, are they cheating? Are they doing something without me? You know, where are they? You're not always seeking or searching in terms of what that partner is or is not doing. There's progression. So there's always consistency in terms of if I say something, I do something, right? And if I don't, I'm going to tell you, I can't do that, whatever. There is progression. So a lot of times people that are in insecurely attached situations, and I call it a situation more than a relationship, it stays a situation. It's a situationship. It just stays there. Yeah. It doesn't progress anywhere. Or if it does, it takes a long time. And that's because somehow that's, you know, there's a shift in, let's say, attachment style, but usually it's because somebody, you know, like they've switched roles, but usually what happens is somebody ends up leaving before then, you know, and then not to say that sometimes it doesn't work out. It's that the majority of the time it doesn't work out.
Yeah. In my own mind, two insecurely attached people find each other. I mean, there's in the therapy world anyway, there's this idea that we wouldn't get together with somebody if we were too different in terms of, I don't know if I want to say our level of functioning or how, you know, I would say our differentiation, but somebody who's really securely attached is not really going to partner with somebody that's super avoidant or super anxious, right? So we're usually getting two sides of this, of a coin in one situationship, right? Somebody's more avoidant, somebody's more anxious, and their stuff is playing off each other. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a yo-yo, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always said that because I will have people come in and they'll go, I thought I was securely attached. And then I had like a quiz on my website. And so they would take the quiz and they're like, oh my God, I'm not securely attached. Or they'll argue it. And I go, if you're securely attached and you have this person who you have anxiety about, where you feel like you don't know what's happening, you always feel like you're in the dark, you feel like you always have to have the conversation, all that kind of stuff, you're not securely attached. And a securely attached person has zero interest. They don't want the drama. It's like, this is too much work.
They'd be out the door, right?
Right. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And all this to say, I mean, I want to just emphasize this. Our attachment is not our fault. You know, like, I don't want it to sound like we were just beaten up on it.
No. Know,
your fault. You're not securely attached. And what's wrong with you? This is a hand we got dealt in our upbringing. It makes sense the way people are struggling, right? So how people become more securely attached? Like, what do they do as adults when they realize some of the stuff is going on in my relationships? I'm attracting this stuff. I'm living in this drama. And I actually want to improve. Like, what are some of the tools for people?
Well, there's a few tools. I mean, there's a lot of tools in terms of, there's a lot of steps that people have to take. And why I say that is, usually we don't have a lot of self-awareness. We may think or notice, oh, I don't like that I do that, or I don't feel comfortable with that. But we don't really dig deeper into our emotions. And I'm all about, you have to know how you feel. You have to learn that your emotions matter, that your feelings matter. You also have to take responsibility for your choice to be wherever you are, which is an emotionally mature position. And a lot of people don't understand that because they're always waiting for the other person to, you know, say or do whatever it is that it's going to make them feel better. And it doesn't work that way. It works from the inside out. And as you start to, you know, develop ways, and there's so many ways, but it's really about being able to take that step inside. And then you have to do what's uncomfortable. And it doesn't mean on a big scale where you have a panic attack, but what it means is you have to start looking at yourself from an adult perspective. And the things that, like I talk about in my book, it's about becoming an adult emotionally.
And it's okay that we have to grow ourselves up that way. I mean, this is the work we, you know, almost all of us are going to face, right? To have to do that.
Of course. And you feel, you know, the thing is, like, because I've done it, I look at it and I think about how I used to feel all the time. I used to have anxiety all the time. I used to feel heavy all the time. I used to struggle with certain decisions because I was so tuned into what somebody else might want or what's going on out here. How can I be strategic in my choices rather than how do I feel? What do I want? And, you know, where am I going to stop blaming or waiting for somebody else to run my life for me, especially when it came to attached relationships?
Yeah. I don't know if you agree with this or not, but to me, part of it is learning to tolerate the anxiety that's part of life and relationships too. Instead of looking to solve it or settle it down or get our partner to make us feel better or control people or whatever, it's about being willing to just sit in that anxiety or unsettledness and kind of tolerate that, right?
I totally agree. And I think what happens is a lot of people are afraid of their own feelings, right? Mm-hmm. Including anxiety. Because when you're a little kid in a little body, it's overwhelming to feel anxiety, like a little five-year-old, right? But you're not a little five-year-old anymore. You're an adult and you can handle it. And then once you get out the other side of that, you're like, oh my God, I have emotional resiliency. I can handle things that I didn't think I could handle. And that makes you more, let's say, adventurous or more willing to take emotional risks because you understand I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to be destroyed by this.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about the prognosis. I guess somebody's in a relationship like this. Can one person take this on and work on their own emotional resilience and their own attachment with someone else who is insecurely attached? Like we already said, most people are going to partner with someone else who struggles in a complementary way. Can one person change this? Can you be in a relationship like that in a healthy way if one person is sort of addressing this?
Absolutely. And the thing is, I always tell people that because that's another question when people show up. They're like, oh my God, do I have to break up with this person? And I always say no, because you've got to learn. You have to be curious. Like, why am I here in the first place? And it's not a mental answer. It's through getting deep enough into your emotions and your inner motivation, your beliefs, and understanding why you've chosen to be where you are. So I tell people who are in a relationship like that, I'll go, Okay, so your goal, what is your goal? You want a healthy, happy relationship. You want to be a great partner, right? Yes, I do. Okay, great. So here's the thing that comes with that. That means that you can do that in the relationship you're in right now, because you're so focused on the other person and what they do or don't do. When you shift your focus to what am I doing? What am I feeling? What's my motivation? All those kind of things, you start to change the dynamic with the other person. Sometimes that other person gets on board. Sometimes they don't, but you don't have any control over that. And that's what you have to remember, is you cannot control the other person.
Yeah. I sort of, the way I describe it with clients is sort of like, if you change your steps, the dance with your partner has to change. It will change. Now, whether it's going to change in a way you would choose to stay in or not, we don't know. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. And people are afraid of that too. You know, and that's why I'm always like, you don't have to leave the relationship, but they still have this fear, especially when you're anxiously attached, that, oh my gosh, if I change anything at all,
right, I might lose them. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Final thoughts. Anything I haven't asked you that you want to make sure we share with people?
You know, when you feel any sort of intensity around your feelings and around sex, you know, that drug feeling, just know it does not mean anything about this being your perfect partner or not. It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that that's a pretty important one, because then it just leads you into fantasy land, and then you stay in fantasy land. And that is another thing. Try to be in reality in the moment. It is difficult to do, and it feels disappointing. And it's to deal with that disappointment of reality rather than you're prolonging, let's say, your agony by staying in the fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. Just because we'd rather the fantasy be true, but the more we can see the reality, the better. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Yes. So tell people where they can find you. You mentioned a book and a quiz. So please talk about what kind of resources you have for people.
So you can go to my website, tracycrossley.com, and there's a quiz on the front page, and it's basically about your attachment style. And you can also buy my book at any bookseller, which it's Overcoming Insecure Attachment. And it's really written, it's not just about insecure attachment. There was a different title actually when I wrote the book. Publisher changed the title of the book. Yeah. But yeah, it's really about dealing with anything that you think is insurmountable. It gives you, I would say, pretty practical steps, although it comes out to be very esoteric, because you really start to deal with your feelings, your emotions, and digging deeper. So you can find that at any bookseller. And social media wise, just pop in Tracy Crossley in Google and you'll find me.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is Patreon. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.